forum for frank talk about what people do for a living. Works do.
Hello, and welcome to Works Do. It's July 25th, 2011, and this is episode number 15. I'm Kate Gase Walton. I'm the editor of Works Do, an online collection of essays and interviews in which people ponder their work lives. Today's interview is with Annette Kripke. Having studied at the French Culinary Institute, Annette is now a cook at Daniel, a 3-Michelin-star restaurant in New York City. But she's also got an MBA from Columbia and years of experience at marketing agencies like Sapient, Razorfish, and Ogilvy Action Digital. I wanted to find out why she decided to make such a radical career change and how it's working out for her. Here's the interview. Okay, so I am talking today to Annette Kripke, who is now a cook at a 3-Michelin-star restaurant in New York City called Daniel. Annette, thank you for making the time to talk to me today.
Thank you, Kate. I'm looking forward to this.
Now, you know that one of the reasons I'm so intrigued by your career path is that the cooking that you're doing now is a radical departure from what you were doing before. So I hoped we could start with your just explaining the big career change you made and why you made it.
Yeah, I think the term career path may be misleading because it was more like meandering in lots of different directions, I guess. I did a BA, a master's in economic development, and an MBA in finance at Columbia, and spent a decade after that out of the country working in places as far-flung as Mongolia, Vietnam, Ethiopia, Egypt, Bosnia, Bulgaria, and other such bit off the track places, and loved it. I mean, really enjoyed doing buy-side and sell-side privatization work. Then at one point I came back to the States, you know, like everybody else around the turn of the millennium, did some technology startups, none of which made me the millionaire everybody else seemed to become, and somehow then ended up in advertising. So, you know, that was sort of a bit different from what I'd done before, although I guess the strategy component of it, you know, was consistent throughout. And about 2 years ago, I was just becoming increasingly dissatisfied with what I was doing. And at one point, my husband just asked me, well, what is it you really want to do? And he's like, I'm not really sure. And he goes, well, what do you love to do? And I'm like, I love to cook. Like, well, then maybe that's what you should be doing. So I went from being a client partner and director of account management for advertising companies to enrolling at the age of 40 or 41 at the French Culinary Institute. And I did their professional bread program and their culinary program.
Tell me about the program itself. How long was it?
So the bread programs, I think it was 10 weeks, and every day, eight to four, something like that. And then the culinary program is 6 months. It's an intensive course. Again, every day, no holidays, and eight to four. Following which I was interning at various restaurants, including Aquavit, which is a Scandinavian, times 2-star Scandinavian restaurant in Midtown, which is near and dear to my heart as a Dane. So, you know, it makes for long days when you're catching a bus at 6:45 and you're coming home at midnight after work, and doesn't leave a lot of time for family. But, you know, as my husband just kept saying, he's like, but at least you're happy. And, you know, that I mean, it's, you know, it's true. I mean, you know, as much as I come home covered, my arms are covered in burns and scars and cuts, and, you know, I don't bother eating anything outside of work because I'm too tired when I come home to do that. But it's, you know, it's like getting paid to work out, right? You go in there, you sweat all day on the line, and I'm probably in better shape than I've been in decades.
Were you unusual among your classmates at the French Culinary Institute in going on to make a career out of cooking, or does everybody go on to do that? I mean, are some doing it really just to improve their skills as an amateur? Do the vast majority go into it professionally?
Well, it's interesting because I was actually surprised by how many people do not go into the professional, you know, professional culinary arena afterwards. Since, I mean, it's quite a time commitment. It's also expensive. I mean, I think FCI is $45,000 right now. So, I mean, it's not a small investment. So, you know, if you want to be an amateur cook, there are amateur programs you can do there that would probably be, you know, less of a hit to your wallet. But I know there were people I went to school with, and, you know, they went on and, you know, one's off bartending somewhere, you know, in California, and someone else, you know, used it as to give herself a better base to be a food writer. So I thought that was interesting, you know, relevant also. Someone else wanted to go into retail, you know, to food retail, like a cheese shop or something. So people went in a lot of different directions.
Right.
There's really only one person I know that's, you know, working the line in on a restaurant from my group. And we, you know, we started as 24, we probably ended as 20. Because the dropout was, you know, is tied somewhat to things like attendance. There's literally a, you know, if you miss more than two classes, you fail.
So one reason that I've heard that there is something of a disconnect at cooking schools with not everyone going on to cook professionally is just because the reality of doing that, especially at a high pressure restaurant, is very, very tough and perhaps not what everybody had in mind when they envisioned, you know, cooking for their career.
Cooking for a living is not for the faint-hearted. It's incredibly badly paid. I mean, you know, I make $9 an hour right now plus overtime, right? Now, that's maybe a little bit worse because it's in such a high-profile restaurant. I could make a few dollars more working someplace less prestigious. But I mean, still, that's a far cry from, you know, bringing home, you know, $200,000 a year, right? And I'll probably never do that unless I have my own place, because it's not going to be working the line that you make that kind of money, right? But if you don't have a thick enough skin to stomach constant criticism and no praise. And that's what's actually fascinating. And maybe it's just because I'm largely within a very French system. And but the default is, if you do well, nobody says anything. And if you do badly, everybody jumps on you. So, I mean, can I curse in French on the show?
You absolutely can.
Okay, because, you know, it would be, putain, et alors, qu'est-ce que tu fais là? Non, mais qui t'a dit que le faire comme ça? Non, c'est fou. Oh, merde, Annette. You know? And it just goes on and on. So, you know, having just been called a hoe, French, you can't take that personally because the guy next to you would also, you know, potentially be called that. So it's not gender specific, if that's any consolation. But
I mean, it sounds almost like kind of a military atmosphere where part of so many military experiences is, in the early years anyway, kind of a being broken down. Is that right?
That's actually exactly correct. And the Escoffier, you know, famed French chef, really built this brigade system, defined it, and it's literally called the brigade, right? So everybody has a very defined role in a kitchen, a position, and, you know, tasks that they're responsible for. And, you know, we wear uniforms. And God forbid your uniform is not clean, right? So, you know, so I mean, it's, we wear uniforms, we have prescribed roles, we have prescribed titles, we have prescribed tasks. We get abused regularly. But if you do well, you're promoted, right? So
what is the career path? I mean, where might you go from your current role, or where would you hope to go?
So, I mean, maybe I'm not so different from other people in the sense that I'd like to have my own place eventually, right? So my goal is really to learn as much as possible, as quickly as possible. And to that end, you know, I'll tolerate almost limitless levels of abuse as long as I'm learning something from it.
So what are your tasks at the moment? What do you focus on?
So right now, I am in the arguably most physically demanding role, because I laugh because it's just the quantities of stuff that I deal with are just enormous. So I go in the morning, I tend to make breakfast for 20 people when I walk in, the overnight bakers and the rest of the people that are, you know, we've got pastry chefs that are coming in at 3 a.m. now because they're providing goods to a bunch of the restaurants. So I cook breakfast for 20, then at noon, I cook lunch for 50, and then at 4:30, I put out dinner for 150 people. So that's obviously not plated. That's just family style meals, and we actually call it family meal, as opposed to staff meal, la famille. And then I also do all of the stocks. So I'll come in the morning and maybe put in 10 cases. So 400 pounds of chicken bones and another 40 to 60 pounds of mirepoix, of vegetable garnish, and then in the evening maybe do 500 pounds of veal stock, so which will run overnight. So that's again 10 cases, 500 pounds of frozen veal bones that go in, and then you roast off all the veg and everything, and then that'll run for 18 hours, and that gets decanted, and those are 65-75 pound buckets of stock that need to get lifted into a jacuzzi or the chill bath.
Right. So I'm picturing you kind of, you know, weight lifting and moving at high speed, 12 hours a day, 6 days a week. Is that your schedule, by the way? Is that what you work?
Yes.
And
actually,
so
that's giving me the weekend off.
Amazing. So is there anything as you're doing that you find yourself missing about your former life? I mean, I should say, from what I've read, you had, you know, senior roles at places like Sapient and what was then Razorfish at Ogilvy Action Digital. You were in client services, which is, you know, also not an easy job. But is there any part of that life that you ever find yourself missing?
I miss my expense account.
Right.
I miss it a lot, actually. I realize... I miss being able to charge a cab home at midnight if I was at the office working late, because, you know, now to take a cab home at midnight when I'm at the restaurant would basically be my day's wage. So there's an element, you know, that kind of, it's the comfort maybe that I miss a little bit. You know, when I think about it though, gosh, you know, God forbid the air conditioning wasn't at 60 degrees while I was sitting up, you know, sitting in my office admiring the views and, you know, tapping away at my laptop when I was at work. And now, you know, the physical deprivation of it, you know, I mean, I'm just basically sweating for 12 hours. But all else aside, I mean, it's, you know, the remuneration, obviously, you know, I do miss, but it's actually customer/client contact that I miss a bit now. So, you know, being back of house, which is what the kitchen's, you know, is part of, right, in the sense of we don't actually interact with our customers, is a bit of an odd situation for me, because I like to have that feedback for my clients, right? And I like to have an interaction. I like to know that what I'm doing is hitting the target. So because I'm right now focused internally at the restaurant, that's something I'd like to change. And I actually just trailed at one of the other restaurants yesterday, or Friday, I guess. They got called in. They have a need, and that actually would have some more customer focus, which for me would potentially be a really good fit, right? Because to be able to get that real time feedback on what they're liking, not liking, how the food is, what they'd like to see added to the menu, what isn't working for them, that's actually something that I would like to get back into my life, if that makes sense.
Actually, I'm going to sneak in one last question, which is that you've, as you said, when you first started, changed gears, three, four times over the course of your career, from investment banking to startups to agencies to cooking. And what strikes me as interesting is you actually sound like you were pretty contented with each of those phases in their own way. So do you see those kinds of quite major career changes just as sort of the new way of being, and maybe something that won't even be all that extraordinary down the line?
You know, that's a good question. I don't know the answer. I mean, it's funny, my husband's a software engineer. He develops software. That's what he does. And he does it incredibly well. And so there's a part of me that thinks, maybe if I stayed more focused, my career path would have been a path, and I would have, I don't know, I'd be president. I can't be president. I'm not American. Okay, but you know what I'm saying.
Some other goal, yeah.
But some other goal, like if I just had one goal. And instead, I think my goal is, in some ways, if I had to define it, has always been to leave the world a better place than you entered it, right? And I mean, and it sounds really stupid and trite, but I would say all of the things that I do still work in that direction, but the focus has changed, right? So when I did global economic development work, it was literally great. Through forcing an acquiring company to agree to keep on 3,000 employees for at least 5 years and provide retraining so that a whole region didn't go unemployed overnight. That made me feel good, right? So now, to put out a meal that someone goes, oh my God, that was really good. Thank you. That was a great evening. And you're like, excellent. So it's a different sort of satisfaction, but it's still, at the end of the day, making other people happy still makes me happy. And so should I have maybe had more of a concentrated path? Arguably, yes, maybe. But in some ways, I kind of think, gosh, I wish I'd just given into the cooking impulse way back when, because back in college, I, worked in a bar. I cooked in a pub in England. I did all sorts of things. Imagine where I could be now.
Well, thanks, Annette. You have given me more time than I asked for, and I really, really appreciate it. And we'll wind up there so that you can go back to your family in the few hours that you have before the kitchen calls you again.
No worries, Kate.
That wraps up the show for today. Thanks again very much to my guest, Annette Kripke. Thanks also to everyone who's contributed an essay to Work Stew. And finally, thanks very much to you for listening today. The next episode will be released in 2 weeks, and I hope you'll check it out. In the meantime, please let me know what you thought of the interview by sending an email to kate@workstew.com, by posting a comment on the Work Stew website, or by writing a review for iTunes. Thanks again, and bye for now.